Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, May 18, 2017. We'll begin today's reading with an article on the front page headlined, Need a Friend? Take a Seat on the YMCA's New Buddy Bench by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review, Decatur. The idea behind a buddy bench is fairly simple. Kids who need a friend but don't quite know how to go about it can sit on the buddy bench. Another child, or more, can join the first child, and presto, friends. When Will Taylor saw the appeal for funds for a buddy bench at the YMCA, it immediately caught his eye. I thought back to when I went to camp, Taylor said. I was so lonely, I didn't know anybody. What a neat solution. I thought, I gotta do that, I just gotta do that. And he did. Taylor and his wife, Terry, donated the money for a bench, which will be placed at the Y's Camp Sokia. We all long to have somebody, and we all want to have friends and be liked by others, Taylor said. It's just a great idea. Natalie Beck, director of donor services and marketing for the Decatur Family YMCA, said the Y places items in its quarterly newsletter for which funding is needed, and asked artist Judith Rooney, a former Decatur school's art teacher, to create a one-of-a-kind piece. She's working on it in the lobby so patrons can follow the progress. The buddy bench concept is important to the inclusiveness philosophy we have at Camp Sokia, Beck said. A buddy bench is a place for a child to sit who feels lonely or bullied. If a child is sitting on the bench alone, it's a signal to other children to ask him or her to play. The buddy bench came to the United States through a boy named Christian Bucks, whose family researched schools in Germany when they thought they were going to get transferred there in 2013, according to the Washington Post. Christian saw the idea of a buddy bench during that research, and when the family ended up staying in the U.S., he approached his principal about putting such a bench at his school in Pennsylvania. Word got out, and the idea has been picked up by elementary schools all over the country. The benches are as individual as the communities, and more than 2,000 exist in schools and camps nationwide. The effort has its own website, buddybench.org, and Facebook page with nearly 3,000 likes. The uniqueness of the buddy bench is also that it is such a visible cue to the children, Beck said. It's something tangible that's being created just for them. Rooney created the Rudolph float for Decatur's Christmas parade, and as she walked with it, heard a child call out, "It's Rudolph!" She hopes the buddy bench has a similar effect on kids who see it, and that they'll want to use it, even if they don't feel lonely. As soon as Beck proposed the idea to her, she had an immediate vision of how it should look. "I had this visual that popped into my head," Rooney said. "It should be colorful. And I thought it would be wonderful if we could get a bench big enough to do silhouettes of children sitting on it." She researched benches on the internet, and nothing quite fit the image in her mind until she and her husband visited Arthur and found an Amish craftsman who knew the right person for the job. The final product is a glider, approved by Beck. "That's another thing that excited us," Rooney said. "It's so much more fun to glide than just to sit." The Y is a Christian organization, and Rooney credits her inspiration not to the muse, but to the Holy Spirit. "I want to see children drawn to this, and I hope, whether they need a buddy or not, that they'll sit down and enjoy it," Rooney said. Students Sing to Solve Cat Problems by Tony Reed, Herald and Review, Decatur. Setting mining to music might just be the way to highlight the essential commodities it pulls out of the ground and the jobs that depend on miners doing their thing. A team of Millikan University Master of Business Administration students have been working on the public image of mining as part of a class project in collaboration with Caterpillar Inc.'s Decatur plant. The factory builds the biggest off-road dump trucks in the world, and their main customers are miners, so there's a vested interest in getting people to dig the importance of everything that is made from mined commodities and the wealth creation it supports. The three-man Millikan MBA team, Maxwell Gonzalez, 22, Thomas Byler, 23, and Michael Guerra, 23, all have music backgrounds and presented their findings Wednesday in a Caterpillar conference room. They looked at ways of showing how just about everything we own and use traces its creation back to a mined commodity, and developed a series of multimedia presentations. Then, they wrapped up by playing a recording of a pro-mining jingle they had crafted and set to guitar accompaniment. Building blocks of the earth, always wondering what they're worth? Some things you might find familiar. We help here at Caterpillar. Gonzalez said it's been a learning experience all around. We've discovered mining is a fascinating subject, he said, and we've learned a lot about it. The catchy jingle got a round of applause from a critique team that included Caterpillar engineers who don't usually turn to music to solve business-related image issues. Two other three-person Milliken MBA student teams, all studying in a fast-track program that earns them their degrees in a year, also made presentations as part of their classwork. One group looked at costs involved with building different vehicles on the same Caterpillar assembly lines, while another crunched the numbers to improve Caterpillar's handling of raw materials. All the teams who did about 18 weeks of classwork and about 9 weeks working with Caterpillar senior staff as part of their curriculum used a process called Six Sigma to guide their studies. This system breaks down and analyzes how things are done and seeks answers to make any process work better for less money. The Milliken team looking at raw materials handling really hit pay dirt, crafting a way to monitor and track supplies that avoids waste and delays. It's already been put in place in the factory and has the potential to save the company more than $200,000 a year. Ariana Shelton, 23, worked on the project with fellow students Trevor May, 22, and Kelly Hill, 29, and found it a refreshing change of pace. Shelton, who lives in Oriana, works as a dance instructor in her day job and enjoyed stepping into a new role. It puts a lot of weight on you, a lot of pressure. You're using someone else's money, someone else's resources, she said. But it put a lot more drive into me because when I'm in the classroom, it's like, oh yeah, hypothetical situation. But here, I do this, and this is real. Adam Mize, Caterpillar's quality manager for surface mining and technology, was impressed with the quality of the work. I'm incredibly encouraged, he said, after listening to all the presentations and questioning the presenters. Our future is bright. Six Sigma Explain. What is the Six Sigma process used by Milliken University students to solve problems for Caterpillar Inc.? Six Sigma is, basically, a set of techniques and analytical tools for enhancing process improvement. That process might be making Caterpillar dump trucks or running a fast food restaurant. All are capable of being analyzed to detect problems and then reorganized to save money and time. John Yotter is an adjunct professor at Milliken and a Six Sigma Master Black Belt in the Process Improvement Group for Caterpillar. He uses McDonald's restaurants as a Six Sigma case study, charting how the business improved efficiency by first adding a drive-up lane, then adding two windows for pay and food collection, and then an order confirmation screen for quality control. Six Sigma is about measuring and then improving and controlling the process, he explained, and it can be used for anything. Testing reveals elevated lead levels at 12 Decatur schools by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review. Decatur. State-mandated tests showed elevated lead levels in nearly 100 water samples across the Decatur School District, according to results released this week. The results showed that 97 samples tested higher than the 5 parts per billion, the standard that requires parents to be notified under state law. Of those, 30 tested higher than 15 parts per billion, the standard at which the Federal Environmental Protection Agency requires action to be taken. The district conducted testing at 16 buildings as a result of a state law signed in January. The dangers of lead contamination gained national attention after the lead-tainted water crisis in Flint, Michigan, which developed in 2014 when the Flint River became the primary source of water for the city. Lead seepage into the water caused a public health crisis, and President Barack Obama declared a federal state of emergency. The children are most at risk to the effects of elevated lead levels, which can cause developmental delays. Sources of potable water that were tested include taps, faucets, drinking fountains, and wash basins in a classroom, but exclude bathroom sinks and basins used by janitorial staff. Two samples were taken from each water source. The highest number of samples in Decatur schools containing lead was at South Shores School, with 21 total samples testing positive, 15 of them between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 6 over 15 parts per billion. Second highest was Franklin School, with 15 total samples testing positive for lead, 10 of them between 5 and 14.99, 5 greater than 15 parts per billion. Water sources that tested positive were immediately shut off, said Maria Robertson, district spokeswoman, and will remain shut off until repairs can be made. Four buildings contain no lead in any samples: Harris School, Parsons School, Pershing Early Learning Center, and Southeast Learning Center. John Hill's Magnet School, Dennis, and Stevenson Schools had only one sample test positive each. In all of those samples, the lead level was between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion. Parents of Garfield Montessori School students received a letter Tuesday regarding the lead testing of water in the building. A rumor began circulating on social media that the building had no water at all, which was not true. "There is water at Garfield," Robertson said. "There are classroom sinks that have been shut down as a result from receiving water test results. Classroom sinks at Garfield are mainly used for hand washing, not consumption." The letter went home with students after school on Tuesday, but parent David Young said he wishes he'd known before that. "This isn't the first school that this has happened to," Young said. "I've got two kids at Muffley, and it also happened at Muffley, and we didn't find out about Muffley until we saw the story in the paper. My wife and I were talking last night, and it seems ridiculous that the two high schools got completely gutted and remodeled, and kids are still going to grade schools with no air conditioning and no lead testing until now, as far as we're aware." "With four new school board members," Young said, "now is a good time for parents to start attending board meetings and airing their concerns." At Garfield, 9 classroom sinks tested positive for the presence of lead, and all 9 have been shut off. "The reason that caught so much attention," Robertson said, "is that Montessori curriculum requires a great deal of hand washing and use of the classroom sink. Shutting off those sinks created the inconvenience of having to leave the classroom to use other water sources." The Buildings and Grounds Department has put repairs of the problem water sources at the top of its priority list for this summer's work, she said, with the goal of having it all complete before the beginning of the next school year in August. The lead testing results are posted on the district website. The first results came in at the end of April, and district officials said the rest would arrive about 2 weeks later. The results released Monday included the remaining schools, with the exceptions of Hope Academy and the two high schools, all of which were built after January 1, 2000, and are not required to be tested. The district was not required to test water sources in the two middle schools either, Robertson said, as the law only focuses on the smallest students. Buildings serving preschool students and buildings with kindergarten and first grade students must be tested, and all the results have come back for those district buildings. Lead standard for schools. Lead testing requirements. Buildings constructed before January 1, 1987 must be tested by the end of 2017. Buildings constructed after January 1, 1987 and before January 1, 2000 must be tested by the end of 2018. Daycares built before January 1, 2000 and serving children 6 and younger must be tested. Parents and guardians must be notified if levels exceed 5 parts per billion. Lead testing results for Decatur schools. 2 samples were taken from each water source. Baum, 16 sources tested, 2 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 2 results greater than 15 parts per billion. Durfee, 23 sources tested, 4 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 1 result greater than 15 parts per billion. Enterprise, 20 sources tested, 4 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 2 results greater than 15 parts per billion. Franklin, 19 sources tested, 10 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 5 results greater than 15 parts per billion. French, 15 sources tested, 8 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 6 results greater than 15 parts per billion. Harris, 11 sources tested, no results greater than 5 parts per billion. Muffley, 11 sources tested, 3 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 3 results greater than 15 parts per billion. Oak Grove, 21 sources tested, 7 results between 4 and 14.99 parts per billion, 4 results greater than 15 parts per billion. Parsons, 12 sources tested, no results over 5 parts per billion. South Shores, 21 sources tested, 15 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 6 results greater than 15 parts per billion. Stevenson, 9 sources tested, 1 result between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion. Dennis Lab School, 25 sources tested, 1 result between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion. Garfield Montessori, 20 sources tested, 11 results between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion, 1 result greater than 15 parts per billion. Johns Hill Magnet School, 11 sources tested, 1 result between 5 and 14.99 parts per billion. Pershing, 32 sources tested, no results greater than 5 parts per billion. Southeast, 8 sources tested, no results greater than 5 parts per billion. 12-year-old boy shot during Southside home invasion, by Huey Freeman, Herald and Review. Decatur, a 12-year-old boy was seriously injured early Wednesday morning when an unknown suspect forced his way into a residence on the 400 block of South Maffitt Street and opened fire, striking him and a 20-year-old man, police said. The 12-year-old male suffered several gunshot wounds, said Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland. Both victims were transported to St. Mary's Hospital. The 12-year-old male was subsequently airlifted to St. John's Hospital in Springfield. The younger victim is expected to survive, Copeland said. The older victim was treated and released. The suspect was described as a tall, skinny, black male wearing all black clothing. We are executing a search warrant at the premises where the incident occurred and processing the crime scene, Copeland said. Anyone with information on the incident is asked to call the police at 217-424-2711 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477 or visit www.247.org. DecaturCrimeStoppers.org. A reward will be given to anyone who provides information leading to an arrest. Witness testifies about hearing gunshots near Zimmerman murder. By Edith Brady Looney, Herald and Review News Service, Bloomington. A woman who heard sounds similar to gunshots near the office where Pam Zimmerman was killed waited 2 weeks before telling authorities about her observation, according to her testimony in a pretrial hearing on the murder charges filed against the victim's ex-husband. Jody Sipe testified that she was meeting with a counseling client in her office at 107 South Regency Drive in Bloomington on November 3, 2014, when she heard a series of explosive sounds. Sipe, who was called by the defense, said she and her client simultaneously asked, "What the hell was that?" when the noise erupted. The time of the sounds that Sipe described as almost rhythmic in their rapid succession was 5:17 p.m., said Sipe, recalling that she had looked at the clock in her office. But it was not until mid-November that Sipe called Crime Stoppers with the information about the shooting. Her conscience, she said, had led her to make the call. First Assistant State's Attorney Adam Grist confronted Sipe with audio of her interview with Bloomington Police on November 21, 2014, in which she put the time of the noise at 5:22 p.m. Grist also questioned the witness about her close friendship with Zimmerman's former girlfriend, Kate Arthur, and the conversations the two had after Pam Zimmerman was found murdered in her office in the 2100 block of East Washington Street, where she worked as a financial planner. According to Sipe, Arthur was upset that Kirk Zimmerman's home was being searched by police, and he was considered a suspect in his ex-wife's death. Sipe denied that she discussed her testimony with Arthur. The timeline of the shots allegedly heard by Sipe conflicts with what police know about Pam Zimmerman's final hours. The victim's last meeting with a client ended shortly after 5:30 p.m., and an analysis of her cell phone showed it was taken from the office around 6:15 p.m. Pam Zimmerman's last client, Eldon Whitlow, testified Wednesday that she walked with him out to the lobby of the building after the two ended their meeting. Whitlow was briefly scrutinized by police, who examined his 9mm gun, a weapon that matched the type used to shoot Zimmerman 4 times. Other testimony Wednesday focused on more statements people heard Pam Zimmerman make about the marital discord between her and the suspect. Talks between the couple over money issues became so heated during divorce mediations that she predicted he might kill her, according to Karen Anderson, a divorce mediator and parenting coordinator, who recalled Pam Zimmerman's statement after a mediation session in April 2012, where Kirk Zimmerman's pension was discussed. "He's going to kill me. I'm really afraid he's going to kill me," Anderson testified, quoting Pam Zimmerman. Anderson is one of about a dozen witnesses who have testified about statements they attribute to the victim during her contentious 2012 divorce and the days leading up to her death after she became engaged. The fact that Zimmerman's State Farm pension was part of the marital assets normally considered for division in a divorce made him extremely angry, said Anderson. After one mediation session that ended with Zimmerman commenting, "This will not happen," in reference to a split of the pension, the mediator said she had serious concerns for Pam Zimmerman's safety. Anderson said Pam Zimmerman decided not to pursue a portion of the pension as part of the divorce settlement. Emails submitted as evidence during the hearings indicate that Pam Zimmerman initially tried to use the pension as a bargaining tool in the divorce settlement, but she withdrew from that effort and signed a child custody and property agreement. Earlier Wednesday, Eric Yerpe, a friend of the victim, testified that Pam Zimmerman declined to push for the pension because she feared her ex-husband's reaction. Defense lawyer John Rogers repeatedly raised objections during the testimony from state witnesses, who sometimes struggled to produce a verbatim recollection of Pam Zimmerman's statement. Curtis Ronacamp was specific in his recollection of what Zimmerman said to him and his wife when they met with her several days before her death. After talking to Pam Zimmerman about their financial plans, the three chatted about her anticipation that she was about to become engaged to a man she had been dating for several months. "She said she didn't know she could be this happy," said Ronacamp. When Ronacamp asked Zimmerman how she felt her ex-husband would react to her marriage plans, she said, "He will go ballistic," according to Ronacamp's testimony. Pam Zimmerman also told the couple that she thought about the proximity of Kirk Zimmerman's new home just down the street from her. When she stood at her kitchen window, she sometimes imagined her ex-spouse shooting her, said Ronacamp, raising his finger to his temple as if holding a gun, the same gesture he said Pam Zimmerman made when she made the remark the last time he saw her. The state expects to conclude its case with four witnesses today. Briefs, Herald and Review staff reports. Decatur, graduations move indoors. Graduation ceremonies for Eisenhower and MacArthur High Schools on Saturday, May 20th, will be held in each high school's gymnasium and not outdoors due to rain in the forecast. Those attending must have tickets for admittance, and families are encouraged to arrive early. MacArthur's ceremony will be at 5 p.m., and Eisenhower's will be at 7:30 p.m. Springfield, Girls on the Run 5K set. Girls on the Run of Central Illinois will hold its annual 5K on Saturday, May 20th, at Lincoln Land Community College in Springfield. The theme is, "The Finish Line is Just the Beginning." The organization serves 675 girls in 3rd through 8th grades who learn self-respect and healthy lifestyle choices. The family-friendly event includes face and hair painting and other activities. Registration is $30 for ages 13 and up and $20 for under 13. Register online at www.gotrcentralillinois.org. Decatur, Wild Wetlands class to be held. Discover the aquatic animals that live in Rodney T. Miller Wetland at Rock Springs Conservation Area during Wild Wetlands at 2 p.m. Sunday, May 21st. Use nets and buckets to catch, examine, and release live creatures. Wear clothes that can get wet and muddy. All equipment is provided. The program is free and for all ages. Pre-register online by May 19th at MaconCountyConservation.org. Decatur, computer class session set. The Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Commission will offer basic computer classes for low-income individuals beginning Monday, May 22nd. Classes meet from 9 a.m. to noon on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays for 4 weeks through June 14th. Eligibility is based on family income. Training includes keyboarding, computer basics, the Internet, Windows 10, and Microsoft Word and Excel. Certificates of achievement will be awarded to those completing the class. For information or to apply, call 217-428-0155. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, May 18th, 2017. Please stay tuned.